What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is not as if all of America is suddenly open arms to gay America, but what a time of change we are seeing. In the military, in the inaugural, in marriage, in Congress, in the Boy Scouts, policies are changing. Attitudes have changed. There are still issues, insecurities, inequities, but there is change. This hour on Point, we talk with a roundtable of gay Americans about being gay in this country now, the life and what's changed. You can join the conversation. Do you see the change? Have you changed yourself? Can Americans now be openly gay without fear, without bias, without judgment? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have three guests with us this hour from around the country. With us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is Denise Cawley. She owns her own marketing firm, Circor Creative, is married to her partner, although her marriage is not recognized in Wisconsin. They have a six-year-old son. Denise, thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. From New York City, we're joined by Caleb Crane. He's a writer whose work has appeared in The New Yorker, The Nation, The New York Times. His forthcoming book is Necessary Errors. He's married and lives with his partner, husband, in Brooklyn. Caleb Crane, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And with me here in the studio is Brian Bryson, a 27-year-old bioengineering PhD student at MIT. He grew up in Florida and Texas. He's been out among his current friends as gay, but just yesterday came out to everybody on Facebook. Wow, big day. Brian, welcome. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, so you took a step just yesterday, maybe thinking, well, I'm going to be on the radio anyway, so this might as well be the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that kind of struck me yesterday, I was talking to my cousin as everything was coming up, I said, you know, in about 24 hours, the whole world could potentially know.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do I want to be able to control this information, and how do I want people to know? And I think, you know, my Facebook friends were a mix of people who already knew, some people from elementary school who I haven't talked to in ages. And I just wanted to be like, you know, hey, guys, I've got a little bit of news for you. I'm gay, you know.
What's the response been?
You know, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. I think one of the things that I was really interested about was to see, you know, one of the things I actually did before I did anything was I took a screenshot. I said, how many friends do I have now, and will I lose anybody in the process?
Yeah, yeah.
And that has absolutely not been the process. I think what has happened is people have really come out of the woodwork just to say, just to be really affirming and say, you know, whatever you choose, whatever you want to be, and whoever you want to be, that's fine by us. And it's been really remarkable to see the turnout.
Caleb Crane, you are the senior member of our panel, not so old at 45, but Denise is right in the middle. There you are at 45. That means you've got some, what, experience, some perspective on where things stand right now. You know, I've seen your sometime colleague, Alex Rice, at The New Yorker, right, that, you know, some days he just wakes up and can't believe how things have changed. What's your sense of the arc that we're on here in terms of openness, acceptance, ease of living as gay in America these days?
It's pretty incredible. I certainly never expected to live into a time when gay marriage was legal. We didn't have Facebook when I came out,
right,
so
yeah.
I wasn't able to count whether my friends
dropped
or
off
decreased
or not. Right.
In any. And you know, I remember it being actually a little rocky. It's completely amazing, and I feel like living in Brooklyn, I probably have it easier even than most.
I think it matters where you live in this country. It matters kind of geographically, or maybe even the circles that you move in. Denise, what about your experience? Here, you're 39. You've got some experience under your belt, some years. Is it easier? Is it better now? Is it you know, hallelujah, it's all like a level playing field and wide open openness, or something in between?
Well, I would say it's definitely easier on the coast. I used to go to school in New York City. So, you know, there it's not even something anyone thinks about. And we can hold hands when we are on vacation in New York. Mm-hmm. Here, we would not hold hands going down the street. And every time we have, we've certainly gotten, you know, calls, cat calls and stuff like that. On the other hand, my partner and I have been together for 17 years. It'll be in March.
Long time.
Yeah. And
congratulations.
Thank you. We've certainly gone through... you know, a whole range of experiences and things like that. I was on the board that started the first Milwaukee LGBT Community Center here in the late 90s, mm-hmm. and very much my full coming out was because I became the spokesperson for that organization then, and I'm actually back on the board there now, and the issues from then to now are just drastically different.
Give us a sense of what the issues were. I mean, that's quite a span of time right there. When you began working on the LGBT sort of leadership in Milwaukee, issues then and now, how have they changed?
Well, when we first wanted to start a community center, I was on the first board, and so we didn't even have a building yet. And then we had so many people who just wanted to meet somewhere. They felt they couldn't go to a coffee house and say the word gay. They couldn't find a place to hold a meeting or, you know, do any sorts of rallying and stuff because they were so afraid to even say the word gay in public anywhere or to ask for a space to meet. And now we have over 50 groups during the course of the year that meet at the Milwaukee LGBT Community Center. But now the issues, you know, then people would come out and it was more that they were estranged by their family, but they were adults. Mm-hmm. Now we have all these kids coming out, and our Project Q Youth Program is one of our largest programs, and it's really a haven for kids after school. And then now we're also seeing a lot of issues with seniors who had been out, you know, for quite some time, and then they go into nursing homes or hospital settings, mm-hmm. and perhaps someone doesn't want to change their bedpan or help them because they're gay, and they're having to go back into the closet as seniors. So really a different span of issues that we're dealing with now that people are more out. They have different issues they face.
I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago that we heard the President of the United States in his inaugural address talk about Stonewall and talk about gay rights. I mean, Brian, you know, you weren't around for Stonewall, but what was your response when you heard that from the president?
I remember vividly. I was actually on the phone with my cousin kind of doing a play-by-play of the inauguration, and I remember kind of hearing it once and saying, did he just go there? And I remember then as he elaborated and he actually said gay brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. I actually started to yell through the phone, and I was like, screaming at my cousin because my cousin was one of the first people that I came out to. And, you know, that experience for her to be kind of holding my hand through that was kind of remarkable because it's actually instead of just saying they should be able to serve in the military, they should be able to do this, it was a different level of acceptance. It was a level of acceptance to include people as brothers and sisters, which has an entirely different kind of emotional reaction.
Here was the president on Inauguration Day.
We, the people, declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still, just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall.
And he wasn't done there. Here's the president again.
Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well.
Caleb Crane, what were you thinking as you heard those words from that majestic setting on the steps of the Capitol building?
Well, I was very impressed. I guess I'm also a little cautious. I'm mm-hmm. I'm wondering a little bit, you know, I mean, my feeling about Obama on this is that he's come further than any previous president, but I have been wishing that he would be have gotten here a little sooner. So I'm looking forward to the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act and to federal recognition. But yeah, I guess I'm sort of, you know, I'll celebrate when it, you know, when the law is signed or unsigned, as it were.
Yeah, who knows which way that's going to go. Of course, things before the Supreme Court this summer. I mean, Denise is working there in the LGBT community in Milwaukee. When you're with your buddies around, friends around New York or beyond, Caleb, in within the gay circle, is there a sense that we're reaching some kind of watershed, that it's that there's been step by step over the years, that if you look back 10 or 15 years, we're in a new day, or does that overstate it?
No, I think it's completely a watershed. I think it's an accumulation of lots of small victories over a long period of time. I mean, just as recently as 8 years ago, there was a presidential election where gay marriage was the boogeyman, and the Republican Party was using that as for fear mongering, and the Democrats weren't quite stepping up to the plate. And so I'm glad they've got here now. They've got there. Yeah.
Denise, what about you on that morning in the inauguration speech and your reaction to the president's words?
I couldn't believe he really did it. You know, we were all hoping he would do it. And my partner's actually sitting here in the studio. And that morning she came in as she was kind of listening to the buildup, and she was crying. And she said, "I think he's really going to come through for us." And she was just really excited. She's crying again just because you played that part of the speech again. So I think there's an excitement to it. But I don't want people to forget that as much as I desperately in the heart of my soul want DOMA to be overturned, that will not suddenly make us all equal. Just the same as what I thought was so important about what he said, by linking Selma and Seneca Falls and Stonewall together, it brought the LGBT rights movement onto the same plane as those. And for decades, people told the LGBT community, do not compare yourself to African Americans and their struggle. And now that's kind of been wiped out, and people are saying it's okay to compare it to that. It's okay to compare it to women's rights. And so that is also a big step. But at the same time, that will, you know, if we overturn DOMA, that will not change everything for LGBT Americans.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about being gay in America now, when there has been a lot of change. Not everything, but a lot. In the military, in the inaugural address, in marriage, in 10 states now, in the Boy Scouts maybe, and more. Certainly in the media and entertainment, it can be a source of a new kind of humor. Here's a little bit from the final season of The Office.
Where does gayness come from, and how is it transmitted?
That is a loaded question.
My pastor said it can come from breastfeeding.
He said that?
Well, he didn't fight me hard on it.
I don't know if there's truth to that.
A kind of send-up humor around it there, and also a very frank discussion. In The New Normal, Season 1, David Murray, played by Justin Bartha, tells his partner, Brian Bartha, played by Andrew Rannells, he's concerned that their new son will be ridiculed.
I hope our son won't experience the same pain and humiliation and exclusion that we did.
David, I'm not concerned about that, because I do believe that a kid's parents rub off on them. But the things that are going to rub off on our kids are things like strength and tolerance and love.
Strength and tolerance and love, new words in some quarters around a whole life. We're talking about being gay in America. I've got a wonderful roundtable with us. Denise Cawley's here from Milwaukee. Brian Bryson with me in the studio, 27 years old, grew up in Florida and Texas. Caleb Crane joins us from New York, lives in Brooklyn. His book, Necessary Errors, coming out soon. Gay and living in a new time in this country. Public attitudes are shifting, so are laws. Gay rights are on the inaugural. Boy Scouts rethinking. We're talking with gay Americans about how life has changed and not changed. Let me begin to bring in some of our bigger audience here. Charlie in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina. Charlie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I like to make a comment about the military. I'm an older person. It was about 50 years ago when I was in the Navy, and I grew up about 20% bisexual, you know, leaning towards women.
Okay.
And as other military person, and I spent the night and in a room before our ship was supposed to go overseas, and we were not committing any sexual act at all, but the military police broke in and took both of us away, and we ended up both of us getting a undesirable discharge, undesirable. And back then they were doing it hundreds every day.
Did that mean on grounds of being gay? Was that the implication or the explicit charge, Charlie?
Yes, it was. That's exactly what it was. On grounds of being gay, this other officer suggested that he climb in bed with me.
So when you look around now, Charlie, after that experience, undesirable discharge, you look at the changes that have come. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a horrible thing because I'm still living with that. I can't get, like, a job with the United States Post Office and other places. They see undesirable my discharge. I'm immediately disqualified from that position. So I'm still living with it, and I was hoping that the military could possibly go back and expound some of those records to let these poor people in the world get better jobs and be better for the economy, et cetera, and so
forth. Yeah, to let people get on. I appreciate your call, Charlie. Denise, there's a good reminder that things may have changed and changed recently, but an awful lot of people are still living with a long, long time of discrimination in this country.
Absolutely. And, you know, the discrimination continues. In our family, we pay about $10,000 more a year in insurance. People think that if you have domestic partnership insurance, that takes care of everything, but you're taxed at a huge rate because I'm considered a stranger to my partner. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's considered that we took someone off the street to decide to give health care to. In the state of Wisconsin, our son cannot be adopted by both of us, the state of Wisconsin, as well as probably 40 other states or so, will not allow same-sex couples to adopt their children. So all those children only have one legal parent. And there's protections that we need to ensure. And there's also atrocities like that gentleman Charlie just mentioned that have gone on and people are still living with the ramifications of.
What's it like for you day-to-day these days, Denise, in your neighborhood of Milwaukee? Do people know you're gay? Do you feel comfortable being open about that? Is it accepted or not? Your social interactions with your neighbors, what's it like?
Our political signs and things like that are frequently damaged or, attacked and stuff like that.
I mean, if you put up I don't know what your politics are, but if you put up a lawn sign, it gets taken down?
Yes. Yeah. Especially by kids in the neighborhood and such. We don't live in one of the cool neighborhoods because they cost more. We're out everywhere we go, obviously, because I'm, one of the spokespeople in the LGBT leadership mm-hmm. for all these years. I've been outed in every newspaper and TV, and my Google, name goes on and on forever with gay rights. So we're just out everywhere, and people can deal with it. And the convenient thing about that is that people who don't like it have gone away out of our lives, and wouldn't we rather be surrounded by people who think that, we're wonderful people to be around?
Caleb, what about you day-to-day in your life? You're in New York City. That's pretty metropolitan as you can get in this country. Is it an issue? Is it never an issue? Is it sometimes an issue? When it is, what kind of issue?
Well, I think, I'm very lucky in that I'm living in an enclave where, pretty much nobody thinks twice about it. But I think even so, I think if you're gay, you don't go a day without wondering, do I need to manage this situation? Like, does this person, because you meet somebody just in the casual course of the day and you're like, do I need to manage this person's awareness?
What does that mean, manage? That like to alert them or to disarm them or what?
Exactly. Either one. You're making a decision as you go along. Last year, my husband and I rented a house in Maine for a week. Yeah. And while my husband was sort of asking about the place, he said, by the way, my husband wants to know how far the house is from the road. And I did want to know that. But the reason he asked the question was to sort of let the owner of the house know that we were a gay couple.
Right. And how'd that go down?
Fine, no problem
at all.
But
it was a calibration moment, in a way.
Right, but it's just like you do that. And I sometimes wonder whether I do that because I'm 45 and I, have lived through an era when you couldn't rely on everyone being sort of
cool.
Copacetic with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because it's very rare these days that anyone, certainly to your face, to my face, will have a reaction that's a bad reaction.
Denise sometimes faces it in Milwaukee. You were in Texas recently. I think your dad lives in Texas, is if I got the story right, and you were down or on vacation maybe, renting a car. And I love that little anecdote about the interaction there. It was one of those, I guess, no big deal moments, but you weren't so sure. Tell us, Caleb.
Yeah. Well, before we rented there's a thing where you rent a car if you're a couple that you have to pay extra for the other driver if you're not married. And if you are married, you don't have to pay extra if you have insurance on your car at home. So I wondered, well, you know, are, we have a, we're married in New York. Are we married in Texas? Will it matter? So I went on the website of the car company, and it turned out that whatever the state of the law in Texas, enterprise rental car considered we were married. So I printed out that sheet, and when we got to the Austin airport rental car desk, I was prepared to sort of stand up for my rights.
Right. Oh, boy, here we go.
not to have to pay the extra $7.50 a day or whatever it was. Yeah. And, you know, and the guy said, so, you know, do you want to put, you know, your friend here on the car? And I said, well, we're actually married. And he said, oh, congratulations. And my husband turned to me and said, you know, wow, they could really give a blank about gay marriage here in Austin.
Right. You're in Texas now. It's Austin, but nevertheless, congratulations, no big deal. And,
right.
And off you went. Denise, Brian, Caleb, stand by. Lots of listeners calling in. Philip in Nashville. Philip, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think the biggest shift that I've really recognized, and I'm about 30, is that kind of the straight allies that we've got, they've kind of started to come out of the woodwork. And that's been really the shift, is kind of, you know, straight friends saying, I'm comfortable with this. You're normal. You're just like me. And the people that are uncomfortable with it, that they are friends with, they're kind of that bridge between the uncomfortable level. So that's really what I've seen that's important.
And maybe that reflects this change that we see in the public opinion polling, where people just say, it's not a big issue for me. Straight allies making the difference. Brian, do you find that in your daily life? You know, is it, and I don't know what it was like in high school. It can still look like bullying goes on plenty there, to at least from my observation. But you're beyond that now. Do you see straight allies kind of making it easy?
Yeah, I think they're certainly making it easier. Just A, being able to talk about your life openly, and then B, having somebody else who can defend you. I think in high school it was, or even middle school, going back even further, it was hard because if somebody bullied you, you didn't have somebody to speak up for
you. You could be ostracized. You could be out there alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I think about what might happen to me, even if, you know, living in Cambridge, if somebody does make an off-color remark and I am walking with a straight friend and this has happened to me,
yeah,
you know, My straight friend would turn around and say, no, that's not cool. And I think that that emergence of people who will speak up, I think is a real testament to the progress that we're making.
Let's go to Alan in Omaha, Nebraska. Alan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that in Nebraska, nothing has changed. It is just as bigoted and backward as it always has been, unfortunately.
At work, or I don't know, at the bar or at the grocery store, where?
State law, just last year within Omaha, the city council wanted to pass a non-discrimination clause for employment and housing, and it didn't pass with an overwhelming majority. It passed, I don't recall the amount, but it was not by any substantial margin, and we had the usual religious folks lining up to speak against gay people.
So what does it mean for your daily life, Alan, if you're gay? I may have missed that, but do you have to, like, you know, keep it under your hat, keep it quiet?
No, it's not a big deal, but I wouldn't dare to do any of the things in public that have been mentioned here.
Displays of affection, for example, you'd be afraid to do that?
Exactly, yeah, you'd be inviting assault.
Denise, what about in Milwaukee on that front?
I would say that's mixed, and it depends on where you are. And also, we're struggling here with that Governor Walker may want to take domestic partners out of the protections for the Family Medical Leave Act in the state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Another thing that hasn't really been mentioned is we've been talking about being gay, but we also need to include in that issues of gender identity and how that comes into play. And some places will pass a law saying that you can't discriminate on sexual orientation. And when that's done, that's wonderful. But we also need to include gender identity in that. We recently had Evan Young, who was just murdered here in Milwaukee, who is a transgender youth. And it's not clear right now if it's a hate crime, because we're not sure if it was, you know, had anything to do with him being transgender or not. But it's certainly something that we've been trying to educate the media about here.
So a lot of change, but nobody's saying it's a paradise or perfect. Lisa is calling from Nashville. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your experience?
My experience has been I now live in Nashville, Tennessee, but I was raised in the Northeast. But I was raised in the evangelical church, and I have found that to be the most discriminating section of the world for me. I ended up not coming out until I was in my mid-30s because of that, and then basically ended up having to leave a church I'd gone to for almost 20 years because I was told that I would never be allowed to do any kind of service or anything, you know, teach anymore. And I had done been quite involved. And
did you try in your original church, Lisa? Did you say, come on, you know me, I'm a person, times have changed, please accept me? Or you couldn't, could you go there?
No, I did. I sat down with the leadership, and we had an initial discussion, and I said, you know, and I wasn't even seeing anybody. I was like, this is a matter of integrity for me. I've got to tell you this. And when we met a second time, I was told that, no, you're always welcome here. You can sit in the pew, but you basically are not going to be able to serve on any boards or do any more teaching. And I said, well, this is where we're going to have to split. I said, I'm not going to be treated. I don't want to just be tolerated. I want to be accepted. And what they don't understand is that they're like, oh, we do accept you. I was like, but no, you don't.
Have you found a new church home where you do feel accepted?
Yes. We're fortunate in Nashville to have two or three different places that are very welcoming. That was about one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever gone through, because I had really been involved and cared about a lot of those people. But that's just mainly my point. I mean, I believe in the church, and I believe in, you know, I feel good about God. But what people have such a hard time with, and what several of my friends, is that they've got to understand that me and God are really cool. I mean, we're good. Me and God are good. But they just can't hardly accept the fact that I don't need their approval. And how can they tell me that I'm not right with God?
Lisa, I so appreciate your call. Caleb Crane in New York, as you listen to that, are you thinking, my gosh, we have a number of different countries coexisting at once here, even within a single city in Nashville?
I think America's always been like that. I think it's great that Lisa was able to find a welcoming church. I think that sounds just terribly bruising to have to go through that.
Do you think, Brian, you're 27. Do you think in your lifetime this will become a non-issue? Is that too much to imagine?
You know, I'd like to think of a world or a future that has more acceptance, but I think that takes time. I think learning about people and learning about their own experiences and learning that being gay doesn't come with any other association other than who you want to love. And I think that's the first step that we need to make, is understanding that the sexuality that I'm part of, that makes me who I am, is about wanting to love and exercising that human instinct. But I think that takes a lot of progress. And I think understanding, you know, being gay is just simply about that. But I think that takes time, and that takes conversations, and that takes knowing people and understanding their experiences.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about being gay in America now. Public attitudes are shifting. So are laws. Gay rights right there in the inaugural. Boy Scouts rethinking. We're talking with gay Americans about how life has changed for them, about how it is now, about what hasn't changed. Brian Bryson is with us today, 27 years old, PhD student in bioengineering at MIT. Denise Cawley is with us from Milwaukee, owner of the marketing firm Circor Creative in Milwaukee. She and her wife, Anne, married in Massachusetts, not recognized as married in Wisconsin. They have a 6-year-old son. Caleb Crane is with us from New York, writer whose work has appeared all over the place. Look for his book, Necessary Errors, coming out. Married, lives with his husband, 45 years old, lives in Brooklyn. Lots of change around them and all of us in this country that we can see in so many ways. these days. How's it playing out in your life? Kevin is calling from Randolph, Massachusetts. Kevin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I think what's happening finally in this country is people are realizing that sexual orientation is just a tiny part of who we are. I'm a straight, middle-aged man, but I also play golf, and I cook, and I drive a truck, and I read books, and I'm into politics. My sexuality is a tiny part of who I am. Homosexuality has always been, in this country, has always been the big boogeyman. If you're a homosexual, that's who you are. That's all you are. That's all you care about. This has been a belief among a lot of people. And I think people are finally realizing that it's a smaller part of a gay man's life as it is in a straight man's life. I'm sure no one's ever referred to me as Kevin the straight truck driver or Kevin the straight guy next door or Mary's straight husband. But we always hear gay politician, gay soldier. Well, another term for a gay politician is a politician, and another term for a gay soldier is a soldier. And I think we're finally grasping that. Homosexuality is a sexual term, and it's your sexual orientation, but you can still be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, and it has nothing to do with homosexuality.
Kevin, I really appreciate your call. Denise, how does that strike you? And is that the attitude you find around yourself in your daily life?
It's interesting that he brings that up because I think that's even something that's happening in the LGBT community. You know, when we first started the community center here, people just had to sort of come and say, hi, I'm gay, or hi, I'm transgender, I'm bisexual. Mm-hmm. And we used to have events, and we had them just because people were LGBT. And now we're finding that our most popular events that we have, for example, this summer I arranged a weed dating event where we had people who are interested in gardening, who are also LGBT, meet in a community garden, and we had speed dating like weed dating for gardeners.
some weeding and some meeting in the garden.
Right, and that was wildly popular, the same as our art show openings are wildly popular, or our professionals, TGIF, kind of meet at a bar night are wildly popular. So we're finding that now that LGBT Americans are, you know, being a little more accepted, they also are sort of allowed to have other interests and be more full people in a way that everything doesn't have to be as colored. But I would disagree. I think that you are always worried a little bit about your sexual orientation. I know my partner and I, even when we went to register our son for school, we sat there staring. And I mean, we spent days filling out paperwork that probably somebody else would have taken 15 minutes to do. We were like, well, how do we answer that question? Well, who is the parent? Well, what address do we put here? Well, how do we, and so there's a lot of things that if you take that for granted, because that's not an issue in your life, you don't realize how it comes down to play out in real life.
But it can still be complicated if it's a gay couple, gay parents. Caleb, look at the social side of this with us for a second. Social interactions, gay, straight. I mean, you know, Kevin, our caller, says, look, there was a time when there was so much sense of strangeness or difference around this. How do you find that standing now in a real kind of granular, intimate way when you're in social settings? Is a person's sexuality right out there as a premier identifier, or is it in your world receding to a secondary status somehow? Is it, you know, always on people's minds, or it's not necessarily even a factor?
You know, I'd agree with Denise that it's probably still hard if you are gay not to always be a little self-conscious about it. But I do feel like it's receding, and I would agree with the caller, Kevin, that, you know, it's certainly an aspiration that I have just to be seen as a person, not necessarily as a gay person. I mean, I have a group of friends that we play soccer every Saturday in the park, and, you know, they all know that. I think they mostly know that I'm gay, but I don't think it's part of how they're interacting with me, and they're certainly not any nicer to me on the pitch because of it.
Right. And if they knew, do you have a confidence in 2013 that it would be like, yeah, fine? Or
most of them know. Most of them know. So I don't want to exaggerate this,
right.
but you know, we get pickup players, and they don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
I don't think they give a hoot.
That in itself is is a new day if you go back decades anyway. Bill in Warren, Rhode Island. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
I came out, I'm 53, so I came out at a time when things were pretty tough. You couldn't leave clubs or restaurants or establishments unless you were in a group, because friends would be threatened singularly. I had a friend who was actually bludgeoned to death. Oh. Walking home from the club or just walking to his car, I'm sorry. I was lucky that my family accepted me. I had a very accepting family, so I think for myself it made it a lot easier. But again, friends ostracized by family members, just thrown out of the house, you know, trying to find places to live. It was a difficult period, and I think that things now have changed drastically. My partner at the time, several years ago, and I would go out, hold hands, just be in public, and feel very comfortable. So, you know, you can imagine listening to President Obama, except our community or our culture was a pretty significant thing. So,
do you foresee a time, Bill, when that's just the way it is in this country? You can feel comfortable to be, you know, with who you love as you are without fear of being accosted or, I mean, you know, certainly not bludgeoned?
Well, I think I'm hopeful. Things are definitely, just looking at the changes that I've seen, you know, in 30 years, I'm very hopeful that we're headed in the right direction. You know, as long as we don't have another administration that discourages this, I think so.
Aaron, Bill, thanks very much for your call. Aaron in Omaha. Aaron, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, absolutely. Thank you for this discussion. This is amazing. I love to hear it.
It's great.
I was
just
calling. My wife and I are legally married. We were married in 2010 in Iowa.
Yeah.
But we live across the bridge. So where we live, we're not legally married. So we don't receive any of the benefits or the protections of a married couple. But we have three amazing children, and they are all in grade school. And I wanted to call and just say we've seen a change. It's slow, but we are one of the only same-sex couples in their school. It's a very small school. We have seen some bullying towards our family. We have I personally have been called a name by a very young student. It wasn't very nice.
Yep.
And it's just sad, but we were unapologetic. We love our family. We're an amazing family. We go to you know, family functions as two mothers. There was just recently a Valentine's Day dance that they threw, and it said mother, father, son, and daughter. And a couple of us went to the administration and said, this is not what all families are. So they changed it, which was very, you know, respectful. And so there's small steps.
But no, I get it, Aaron. I get it. What about other parents and your interaction? Do you feel you know, comfortably invited into their social circles, their conversations? Do you feel foreign to those in some way or not?
The first year I felt extremely foreign. I was looked at, I felt under the microscope. I'm not sure if that was personal feelings or actually how, you know, I was treated, but we did feel very under the microscope the first year. But I'm very involved that we do school functions. You know, we meet people. We are, I wouldn't say, we're not invited to Sunday teas. You know, we don't have a very large group of friends, but the few that we do at that school are amazing. Our kids are doing great. They have tons of friends, and they're just amazing. But I do see a difference. I actually do see a difference.
Aaron, I appreciate your call as well. I mean, Denise, you're listening with a lot of your own experience here, and I wonder how you hear that. There again, you know, if you think back 20 years, the experience Aaron's describing, it's not perfect, but it just seems light years beyond what she probably would have experienced 20 years ago.
Well, certainly. I didn't dream I could ever have a child when I first came out, and now I do. And at the same time, you know, it's, you know, getting pregnant, the clinic here on the lakefront told me that if I wanted to use them, that I was to never mark down that I was a lesbian.
This is a fertility clinic, so you actually carried the child yourself. Okay, I got it.
I did, but I ended up not using that clinic because they told me that I could not come there with my partner, that I was to be a single mother. A single mother is far more revered than someone in a committed relationship if it's a same-sex relationship.
And why did they say that? They were afraid of what their other customers would think? Is there a legal issue, or why did
I was told that one of the doctors at the clinic would not inseminate lesbian mothers.
Mm-hmm. because of his or her own beliefs or outlook.
Right. And on the other hand, I think to most of our straight family and friends, us having a baby was a more heteronormative experience for them, and that kind of made them more comfortable with us in some ways.
They could recognize the whole process and mm-hmm. empathize.
And on the other hand, that was so abnormal for the LGBT community that it's an area that I'm still educating people on to keep in mind, to think about people with children. And, you know, every year I go to the Wisconsin Rainbow Families conference, and I remember last year Saturday night looking around going, oh my God, there's 100 families here and we look like a Benetton commercial, and this is just so amazing, you know. And so as much as it offers me, you know, being a parent, you have to be out all the time. You know, you can never hide.
Right.
I don't think you could well raise a child if you were trying to hide that. So I'm out everywhere. Even when our son was just a couple weeks old, it was like our first outing. We thought, okay, we'll go walk around, you know, the mall. It'll just be our first place we go. And mm-hmm. we were leaned over the baby carriage, and some woman walked up and said, oh, and looks at my partner and says, who is this, Auntie? And I was like, oh my God, I'm supposed to come out here at Coldwater Creek. Like, really? To a total stranger? And it totally took me off guard. Whereas now I would have said, no, that's my wife. That's his other mother. But, you know, I'd never, ever have been faced with that. So I didn't know what to say. I was totally stunned by it. I'd never had to come out that way. Completely, you know, unresearched or anything.
Right. But now you have. And there's change again. Jennifer in Boston's calling. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was driving along this morning listening to the show, and I realized that I came out 40 years ago this month in 1973.
Okay. That's a long time.
And that's quite a while ago. And I was thinking, I remember struggling, like, about what was our identity back then. You know, was I a woman first because I was a feminist? Was I gay? Was I a lesbian? Was I a human?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, we spent a lot of time debating this, and now it's a, you know, we don't have to think about it, not nearly as much, and certainly in the Boston area where I live, where one really, you know, it's almost a non-issue. And the fact that we get married to me still kind of, I find totally amazing.
Does that feel like freedom to you, Jennifer?
Well, I guess it's freedom. I mean, I subscribe to the Emma Goldman theory of marriage, which is, I don't understand why the state has to be in the business of sanctioning it.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess it's freedom, and I think it's recognition. I do have my misgivings about the total assimilation.
What do you mean by that exactly?
I guess there's another expression that I find interesting. You know, we were a movement, now we're a market.
Yeah.
Gay market.
Yeah.
And I think that it is progress. I think there's still many issues that have to be addressed, and a lot of, in terms of equality. So being able to get married is a step along the way, but it's only part of it.
Yeah, and our time is short, Jennifer. Forgive me. I mean, those issues very much open this year with the Supreme Court coming in on DOMA, on Prop 8, and more. We'll see that in the summer. Caleb, I wonder, you know, you can hear Jennifer sort of struggling a little bit with the idea of what she offhandedly there called assimilation, you know, sort of like mm-hmm. just being like just like everybody else, and whether or not right. that's a totally the right target.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a big debate in the gay community for decades about, you know, did we want marriage, or was that too much, too heteronormative? too much with the other guy. I mean, I didn't know before I got married how I would feel about it. It turns out it's enormously powerful. And it's, you know, I don't think it would have felt the same if it had just been a civil union. It has a sort of fascinating kind of sociological function when you get married. Everyone's sort of given this cue to, you know, either keep quiet or support this relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's amazingly powerful. And I think it's, you know, obviously it won't be for everyone, but I think it's something we should have a shot at.
And the idea that gay Americans sort of looking at assimilation as something they can take or leave rather than maybe only dream of or imagine. I mean, Brian, you're mm-hmm. 27. As you look forward, how do you picture life? Do you imagine a long-term partnership? Do you imagine family, children? Do you imagine what feels like full acceptance in your lifetime?
Yeah, I certainly imagine that I want a family. I want to be married. I think that's what I want for myself. As far as assimilation goes, I think assimilation is too strong of a word. I think that everybody's entitled to choose whatever identifiers they want to use to describe themselves. So if today I want to describe myself as a gay man who studies engineering and does something else, that's fine. If tomorrow I want to describe myself as a son and a friend, that should be fine. And I think we should all kind of allow ourselves not to necessarily be confined to a particular label, but embrace everything about who we are.
Well, the world has not been remade, but we are certainly in a new day. We're grateful to the three of you for sharing your perspectives on it with us today. Brian Bryson, with me here in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in, Brian.
Thank you.
Denise Cawley in Milwaukee, you're so generous with your time and insights. Thank you very much, Denise.
Thank you for having me.
And Caleb Crane in New York City. Look for his book, Necessary Errors, coming out. Caleb, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.